Hey, what's up, folks? Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers here. Welcome to another edition of The Winning Drive. I'm joined by my co-host, Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel, as well as the coach, former high school coach at Burnett, Capel, Brownwood, Rotan. Also was a former college football player at Abilene Christian, coached there multiple stints, also multiple stints on the staff at the University of Texas, Coach Bob Shipley. What's up, fellas? How you doing, coach?
Hey, would you speak at my funeral? You know everything about me. That's all there is to know about me. You don't even have to look at your notes anymore.
Hey, that's not all. I missed this. I missed ShipleyRanches.com, baby. I missed that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there you go. That's right.
Can't forget about that. All right, CJ, what's going on, man? How you doing today?
Not a whole lot going on today, Rod. Is that right? I haven't seen any news anywhere, anything from the SEC, any times, nothing. It's slow day, right?
There's big news happening, sports world and beyond today. We'll stick to the sports world. there's a lot of big news happening. But, yeah, we got news.
Smart. That's a smart man.
Yes. This is where we're happy to stick to sports on Texas football. And maybe we can be an escape for some of y'all today. And honestly, for the rest of the year, because it's going to be a wild one. But here at On Texas Football, we're a family, baby. We're all a community. So we appreciate you guys joining us no matter what the climate is. Nationally, you can join us here at On Texas Football. And it's always a family atmosphere, all right, because we family here. Okay, so we got a lot to get into on the show. I want to get into – okay, so apparently there is an article from Athlon Sports, and they often do this. Well, they'll talk to coaches anonymously. I don't know, coach, you're a coach, so I want to get your thoughts about coaches speaking anonymously off the record about other coaches. But thank God they do it, because we have great material to talk about on the show. So the SEC coaches talked about other SEC foes anonymously. We'll talk about what they had to say about Texas and the rivals of Texas. I think it's interesting to see what they had to say about, you know, Oklahoma and Arkansas and Texas A&M as well. So we'll get to that. There's also, speaking of the SEC, there's been an announcement of an SEC celebration, basically SEC Day on the 40 acres. I got one question about it to ask you guys. I want to also get you guys' craziest prediction for the 2024 season. Just crazy. Throw it out there. As crazy as it is, no shame. The crazier, the better. I want to do that later on the show, too, and have a little fun. And there's so much discussion about, and I want to get CJ's thoughts about these three wide receivers that Texas could be trending for in that 2025 class. So I went and did some research, CJ, about the history, recent history, modern history of 3 5-star players at the same position in the same recruiting class and for a program. And it's rare, but it's not unprecedented. It has happened in the last 25 years, even happened at the University of Texas, but it is rare, but it's not unprecedented. So we'll talk about that, because apparently it's possible it could happen again. I want to get CJ's thoughts about that coming up a little bit later on. And we do have a kickoff time for the Texas OU game. Speaking of rivals, we have a kickoff time for that. So we'll talk about the kickoff time for the Texas OU game. Not kegs and eggs this year. So fortunately for Longhorn fans. All right. So we'll get into all those topics. Of course, you can be a part of the show. You're the most important part of the show. So all of your questions and comments, we'll answer and address as many of them as we can. Super chats. You know how that works. Super chats. They can interrupt the show at any time. They jump to the front of the line. So please hit us up with your super chats. We'll address those ASAP. We'll also get into, like I said, a couple of topics on the show. And I have some research of my own that I want to get into and ask you guys about, because there's another top 150 ranking of the best players in college football by CBS Sports. I believe it's by, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's by Blake Brockemeyer, if I'm not. Right? I believe it is, if I'm not mistaken. I'll make sure to get that right, but I believe it is. So, yeah, it is by Blake Brockemeyer. So he's listing like the top 150 players in college football, and I want to get your thoughts and see where the Longhorns are ranked in those lists. So we'll get to that, too. So we got a lot to get into. We'll try to cram it all into the next hour or so on the show. First things first, though, guys, let's talk about the the kickoff time that was announced for the Texas OU game. It is official. I'm glad first year in the SEC, you're going to change things up a little bit. Texas is going to have the 2:30 kickoff time for the Texas OU game instead of that dreaded 11 a.m. kickoff. I didn't like it as a player very much, coach. I don't like it as a fan very much at all. There are a lot of reasons I can complain about it. Some people do like it. I think this is a nice compromise. You can't have it at night. There are plenty of reasons why you don't want to have it as a late, you know, kind of primetime kickoff either for the Texas OU game. We all get that. I think it's a nice compromise having it at 2:30. I like that.
I do too. I think when I first read the headlines, I was really afraid it was going to be like a 7 o'clock game. And that just wouldn't be right. Cotton Bowl, Texas OU at night. I know. 2:30, I can deal with that. Matter of fact, as you well know, it gives the players time to sleep in a little bit more than it does at 11 o'clock game. People don't realize you got to have that pregame meal pretty far in advance of the kickoff. And when it's an 11 o'clock game, those suckers are up having meetings, breakfast, all that stuff at the crack of dawn. I mean, it ain't even light outside. And I'm glad the guys get to sleep in a little bit more anyway.
And CB, you are correct, my man CB. We always appreciate CB joining us. CB, you are correct. I believe my pick six, I believe, was a 2:30 one. My pick six in the Texas OU game was 2:30 kickoff. So, hey, exactly. I feel good. Coach, I got to sleep in a little bit. My schedule, you know, with the pregame meal, it matches up a little bit better than getting up really early to try to force feed yourself some breakfast at that kind of time. And yeah, at all, I never like the 11 a.m. kickoffs or anything. I'd rather be, as long as it's afternoon, sometime noon or later, then it matches my body clock a little bit better. That 11 a.m.
I
might be in the minority here, huh? I love that game at 11 a.m. I don't know what it is. Like, I've gone, you know, each of the last 10 years probably, you know, sometimes as a student, more times as a fan, whether it be high school, whether it be out of college now. But it just felt right. You know, there's certain things about that game and some games specifically, like you always have the Texas A&M game, Thanksgiving week, right? That's its spot in history. It felt like to me that was its spot on the day, the first Saturday in October, right? 11 a.m., that's what you look forward to. For me, as a fan of college football, I hate the 2:30 slot. That right there, I hate it, especially if you're going to a game because you miss the back half of the first slate of games and you miss the first half of the night slate. So if, especially at the Cotton Bowl where you're not going to have any cell service, you don't know what's going on in the rest of the world. And I understand that that's not what that day is for, right? You're there to see Texas and Oklahoma play, but you're unplugged for about 6 or 7 hours, depending on how long that game goes and how long it takes you to get out of the fairgrounds. It's not going to get any easier getting in or out of the fairgrounds. I don't think that's what this is about. It's going to be a mess getting in and out of the Cotton Bowl, the fairgrounds itself, the state park. It's going to be a mess anyways. But now you're in the dead middle of the heat the entire afternoon, right? You're there all afternoon, all morning. I love that game in the morning. It just felt right. You know, you get up, these guys, and it's different, Rod, Coach. I understand y'all have seen it from behind the scenes, having played in it, coached in it. For someone that just only knows about it from the surface level, I loved it. And so for those games, I know folks are looking at it like, oh, it's going to be in October. Yeah, we've all been there. We've all left that game dehydrated, sweaty, hot as hell, because it doesn't matter when that game is played. It's going to be hot.
It's coming out.
I can't remember a cold time that game's been played, but, you know, I guess it does allow folks to tailgate a little bit more. You'll be sharing mimosas in the back, you know, in the backyard of an auto body shop, basically, and in Fair Park. That's all they got in that parking lot back there. It's not a great place to tailgate from my experience. I understand. But it does give you more opportunity to slow things down. You're not rushed. You're not, you know, thinking you'll miss kickoff or whatever because you can't get to the fairgrounds because you can't find parking. This at least allows that opportunity for things to slow down a little bit. But I'll always be a fan of 11 a.m. kickoff. This is the only game I will vouch for being an 11 a.m. game. That may be a week one kickoff at 2:30 in the middle of August that Texas, again, is playing in this year. But I love this game at 11 a.m. It just felt right to me.
Rod, let me just say this. Something you and I cannot relate to, because when you and I were at UT, they were practicing in the afternoons. Now they're practicing in the mornings, early in the mornings. You know, these guys were used to getting up early. So 11 a.m. kickoff, now that I think about it, it's not that bad for the guys because they're used to practicing. And for those of you that don't know, originally Tom Herman started having spring practice in the mornings. Okay. And then eventually it wound up where they were having their fall practices in the morning. And it just seems to be a better, more efficient use of time, you know, to get it in the morning, then have your meetings in the afternoon, study all that. No, not that big a deal. So these guys are used to getting up early in the morning, but you're talking about a 7 a.m. pregame meal.
It's awkward,
and that's tough. I don't like the 2:30 necessarily as a fan and even as a staff member, because just think about it. You know, you're 3.5 hours later. You're going to get back to Austin 3.5 hours later. 11 o'clock game was pretty nice, wasn't it, Rod? Because you get back to Austin, you can still go out that night. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah, you know, you only go out if you win, though. You lose.
I don't need
to go out. We never went out. We only went out when we won. These days, they go out when they win or lose. I think they still go out. And you know what? If I had that kind of money, I would too. But Chuck Coach, when you went out, when you won, you had a better night. You know, you could go out there broke a little bit.
No doubt.
You know, people, they want to hook you up. I can say that these days. Back in the day when you lost, wasn't nobody hooking you up. There wasn't nobody coming over there trying to buy you no drinks. The Longhorn fans are generous when you're winning. When you're not, hey, man, you can't be out there, bro. So nowadays, they got NIL money, so they go out and they eat good, they drink good, so good for them. Having it's a different
life. They still like somebody buying their meal, though, and somebody buying
Seriously, that's still pretty good, ain't it? But so you're right, CJ, from a fan perspective, going to games, I never thought about that. I'm talking about from a player, and I will admit from somebody covering the games, that I like it a little bit later, because I also don't want to be covering the game 4 hours, doing pregame 4 hours before 11 a.m., which is what I'm doing, 7 a.m. So I got to be on the fairgrounds at like 6 a.m. or around 5:30. I'm making my way to the fairgrounds. That is brutal. But I will say it is good, because at least I kind of beat the traffic jam in there, because the traffic jam also is something that at times can just be ridiculous. Also, Cisco Diaz, he throws out there before we finish up this discussion, is the Texas OU time better or worse for the game? Rod, what was an ideal time in your mind since you played in this game? We kind of went through it there. 2:30 for me is ideal. I don't want it too late. I don't want it too early. 2:30 is my man CB brought up. That's when I got my pick six. So I'll stick with 2:30. For Texas, coach is right. Maybe for Texas, it is different. For them playing their best football, I don't know. It's all about that team. They work out differently than we did. So maybe playing earlier for them, not a big deal. Sark right now in the Texas OU game, was he 1-2 in the Texas OU game? So maybe the change in time, you know, help Sark out a little bit in the Texas OU game. All right. Here's a question from CB before we move on, because I got a recruiting. Matter of fact, there's a recruiting question I want to get to here. CB says, did I see right the SEC won't have divisions? Bobby brought this up not too long ago. Is that correct that they won't have divisions, CJ?
Yeah, I saw that they're doing away with divisions as well. It's going to be really interesting what the scheduling process looks like in the SEC beyond 2025. Of course, right now we know what the schedule will look like in 2024. We know what it will look like in 2025, where they just inverse the home and away teams and you play the same schedule again. What does that look like beyond that, I think, is a big question mark. Will you go to pods? Will you go to divisions? Will there be a conference within the conference? I don't know if there's any real decision on that at the moment. Of course, down in Destin, Florida, for the spring meetings, the SEC conference, I'm sure that's going to be a big topic amongst athletic directors, commissioners, folks inside the SEC administration, because what does that also look like for the SEC in terms of the 8-team schedule versus a 9-team schedule? We know that Del Conte's on board with it, but as Bobby pointed out yesterday during the Longhorn live stream, there's only 6 teams right now that play neutral site games. And so you'll always either have 3 home games or 3 away games on a given season. I think if you move it to 9 and you find a common opponent for each team, then you're looking at 4-4. But that's, you know, in a way that's kind of forcing it, right? It's only Arkansas and A&M at Cowboy Stadium. It's Texas and Oklahoma at the Cotton Bowl. And it's Georgia, Florida at the cocktail party down in Jacksonville, Florida, right? So those are the only three games, 6 teams, 6 programs that really have to deal with this eight-game schedule being maybe a 4-3 or 3-4 in terms of home and away games.
All right, thank you for that. Yeah, I'm not sure what they're going to do with that, but yeah, no doubt they're getting rid of divisions, and I think they're going to get a lot more clarity on really the future framework of college football and some of the new rules about the expanded SEC during these spring meetings. Coach, go ahead.
No, I had to hiccup.
That was a strong hiccup, Coach. I thought you were getting ready to say something. It sounded like you were literally about to speak up. That's how strong your hiccup was. All right. Devon Osley here says, if French and Lockett commit first, does DeCorian Moore sign with Texas still? CJ, recruiting question for you. Do you think if they get Lockett and French, can they still get DeCorian Moore on board and get 3 5-star receivers in the same clash? That'd be, well, Texas has done it once before, but that will still be crazy.
Yeah, it absolutely would be crazy. And I think the order won't matter as much for DeCorian Moore as it will for perhaps a Kalik Lockett or even a Jamie French. To me, there are so many other factors for DeCorian with Texas right now that it wouldn't matter necessarily the room in which the 2025 class has at the wide receiver position right now. For DeCorian, of course, he's very close with Colin Simmons, who we saw a very similar recruitment a year ago where Texas had to fend off LSU. They had to prevent him from, you know, from potentially committing elsewhere. And this one, you pull off a decommitment, right? You're peeling away at another school. Texas had to fend away a little bit last year with Colin Simmons. I do think it's a little bit different if DeCorian Moore is one of the last guys to go make their decisions. I do think if it is DeCorian going first or second, it might change something with Kalik Lockett or Jamie French. Of course, Rod, we talk about it. You don't see the 3 5-stars at a single position all too often. That doesn't happen. Texas has done in the past, and they're looking like, again, it's May 30th. So you'll start seeing things really turn up the heat once June comes around. But I do think you have Texas in a really good spot for all three of these 5-star prospects. Getting them to sign might be a bit of a different situation.
Okay, I want to hit this really quickly because I went back and did some research last 25 years. It went all the way back to 2000. How often 3 5-star players at the same position are signed in the same recruiting class to the same program, right? And how rare that is. And it's happened 5 times that I can find here. And I did it based on the composite rankings from 247. So that's the ones I can find that, you know, it's a healthy kind of amalgamation of all the different major sites. So I use theirs. And in 2000, Texas did it, signing 3 5-star wide receivers, Roy Williams, B.J. Johnson, Sloan Thomas. In 2001, Tennessee did it. They signed 3 5-star running backs.
Wow.
In 2001. In 2006, USC signed 3 5-star running backs in that class. In 2022, Bama signed 3 D linemen, and I believe they were all D tackles based on it, but it was 3 D tackles. There have been teams that have signed edge rushers and then D tackles, but I didn't throw them in the same category. This is all at the same position. So I'm looking at interior D linemen is what they were signed as in Bama for 2022. And then A&M, remember A&M in that 2023 class signed 3 defensive linemen, interior D linemen that were considered 5-stars.
How many are still there?
That composite. Yeah, that was, and then they end up firing the coach in the same year, which is crazy. Now, here's the thing, guys. This is interesting. So one of these is not like the other, and it actually is the Aggies. And I'm not picking on the Aggies here. Actually, this may be a compliment to the Aggies. So in 2000, Texas gets 3 5-star receivers. And what, you know, and what is the reason, right? What happened? What's the buildup to that? Well, you had the number one recruiting class that I was a part of in 1999 that had Chris Sims in it, celebrity quarterback. So, of course, those young receivers want to play with the celebrity quarterback. He was the number one player in the country when he came in. And before that, the season before that, you had a Heisman winner in 1998. So 98-99, a lot of momentum building up. So boom, you make a big splash, get 3 5-star players at the wide receiver position. That makes sense. 2001, Tennessee, they get 3 5-star running backs. Well, think about that 2000 draft in 2001. Think about that 2000 draft before that. Jamal Lewis is top 5 picked. And then Tennessee, they won a national title. It was at 98, I believe. So in like 2 years before that, there's a lot of momentum for Tennessee. Won a national title in 98. Jamal Lewis was drafted top 5, the running back position. So running backs are looking at that saying, hey, man, I want to go there and play running back. They produce running backs that can be drafted top 5. Right. So you get that kind of momentum. USC signs 3 5-star running backs in 2006. Well, enough said, right? 2003, 2004, 2005. That's all USC. You got 2 national titles in there. They lose the Texas national title. Reggie Bush is drafted really high in the NFL. He's considered a new age running back. So yeah, running backs want to go to USC because of Reggie Bush winning the Heisman and the national titles. A lot of momentum building up to being able to sign 3 5-star players at the same position in the same class. 2022 Bama also makes sense, right? Bama, Nick Saban is the GOAT, part of their dynastic run in 2021, what they had just won a national title in 2020, 2021, yep. They won the SEC. I mean, it's Bama. That makes sense. You're able to do it. One of these things is not like the other, and it's the Aggies. Because prior to the Aggies signing those 3 D linemen, 5-star D linemen, interior D linemen, 8-4, 5-7, 6-4, so not a great record. It wasn't necessarily, you know, a player. Maybe it was Von Miller and Myles Garrett. You could make that argument that in the NFL, Von Miller and Myles Garrett, around that time, Myles Garrett becomes a perennial All-Pro. He's making first-team All-Pro 3-4 years in a row and is basically now the best defensive player in the league. And Von Miller at that time was traded to the Rams and was a pivotal piece in their Super Bowl run. And maybe you can make the argument that that's why they were able to, because the draft will help you recruit, no doubt, that they were able to get those linemen. Of course, NIL is a big part of that, but we understand that's just a part of the equation. That's the law of the land. So that's the only times that I could find that a program signed 3 5-star players at the same position in the same recruiting class to the same program. And Texas will be the only one in modern recruiting to do it twice if they can sign those 3 5-star receivers.
That's pretty good stuff, Rod. That's quite the rabbit hole to go down there, because you don't really consider that being something of even possibility going into a season, right? There's only you could do it at offensive line, defensive line, maybe receiver. We saw it at running back, but how often do you see 3 running back classes anymore? It feels like that's, and I don't mean to call it archaic, but that's not the way in which you look at recruiting in the most, you know, recent decade or so, with the trends of Texas taking 3 running backs in the last 3 cycles feels like a lot, right? And so I don't know how often teams will even be in a position to take 3 guys that aren't in the trenches. And even then, you have to worry about whether it be a 2 noses, 2 3 techs, 3 in total. Where does that come from? Offensive line. Texas got 2 on the offensive line in 2022, right? They got Kelvin Banks and they got DJ Campbell. Yeah, they were in a good spot for some really high talented 4-stars. That's of course Nato and Cole Hudson and some others in that class. But adding a 3rd 5-star, that would be a heck of a cycle. And Texas, for where they sit currently with French, Lockett, and more, I mean, that's a heck of a testament to Sarkisian, the reputation that this program has already built. Obviously, Chris Jackson coming in and developing 2 top 52 draft picks a year ago, and obviously Jordan Whittington getting selected as well. Things are moving well, and you're going to have to need these big-time playmakers with a Ryan Ringo at the next level. And I just want to sit back a little bit and just kind of picture that, right? Next year, could you imagine Arch Manning throwing the football to a Ryan Ringo, a Jonte Cook, a DeAndre Moore, and Aaron Butler, and now potentially 1, 2, or 3 other 5-star wide receivers? I think that's pretty exciting for Texas fans.
Yeah, exactly. And it would track, too. Like I said, the 4 of the 5 examples that I brought up, the recent examples in modern recruiting history, there was a lot of momentum prior. And Texas recently has a ton of momentum, as you just listed, CJ, going to the Final Four, the combine experience for them, and what Xavier Worthy did, breaking the record at the combine. then the draft, having 11 players drafted. You know, Arch Manning in the spring game and what he did. Now you have a celebrity quarterback there with the, part of the first family of football. And then you get to the video game cover with Quinn Ewers on the video game. Right now the momentum is building, similar to some of those other programs where you could end up getting 3 5-star receivers. The fact you're in the conversation says that right now the program's in a really good place overall.
Yeah. So things are so much different now than they were just 3 or 4 years ago. You know, I would say the chances of us signing 3 5-star players, receivers in this case, you got something called ego that gets in the way.
Yep.
But now that we have, you have the NIL, you have transfer portal, you've got the Manning effect, you know, it's not, certainly not beyond the realm of possibility, more so now than at any time in the history of our program, because of the NIL, because of, and let's say this, I would say Arch Manning's recruiting was on the same level as Sims. Mm-hmm. I mean, agreed. Sims was the guy. Yep. He was the top guy in the country. Now, the internet wasn't as big back then. You didn't have all the coverage that you have now that everybody goes to. But if there ever was a time that it's right for us to get 3 5-star players, this is it.
Agreed. Yep. No, that's a good point, Coach. Yeah, you're right about the Sims. It just didn't have social media back then, but it was big at the time. Arch Manning, because of the Mannings, I would argue maybe it's a little bit bigger, but I agree with you, Roach. And because of social media, and then it feels, and social media and the internet feels bigger because everybody can kind of participate in that conversation. All right, we'll get back to some of the questions. I see some of the questions up here too. I'll get to that question. We'll get to that question from Daniel and Omar. I want to ask Coach about Omar's question here. But let's first thank our fantastic sponsor here. We are very, very proud and happy to have South Point Dodge as a part of the On Texas Football family. So Texas football fans, remember, you can score an easy extra point this season when you get to the point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock and their award-winning sales staff. They don't play games. They're not about gimmicks at all, folks. They want to get straight to the point by getting you the best deal possible. So score big today at South Point Dodge. You can go see them, I-35 in South Austin, or you can go visit them at southpointdodge.com. Also, South Point Dodge is Austin's automotive everything. If you're looking to sell your car, you can get the best offer on the table from South Point Dodge over the phone or online. You can get top dollar for any make or any model. Even if you don't buy from South Point Dodge, you can still get the best value there at South Point Dodge. It's home of the real deal, whether you're getting the lowest price on the newest Ram truck or making sure you get the best value on your old car. So go visit them today at southpointdodge.com. That's southpointdodge.com. So thank you very much to South Point Dodge for sponsoring the winning drive. All right, a couple of questions. I want to get this one from Omar, and this is directed at Coach. It's a really good question, and I think a lot of parents are pondering this. He said, hey, guys, I love the show. In your opinion, what age is a good age to start my boys in tackle? One is 11, and the other is 8. They both play flag football now. They both want to play tackle already. Oh, yeah, they want some physicality. Hey, Coach, it ain't enough to just pull the flag. They want to go hit somebody. What are your thoughts about it, Coach? You got grandkids. You've been father to two of the best football players that Texas has seen, too. I mean, what are your thoughts? When do you start as a parent these days, knowing what we know about, you know, the dangers of the game and about, you know, how to keep young people and trying to be as cautious as possible about keeping young people safe?
Yeah. Well, I would say if you felt like you had to do it, fifth grade is probably the youngest I would start. That's when Jackson started. Jordan never played, never put on pads and played tackle football till the seventh grade. So I think the key is developing their skills. I mean, it's one thing for an offensive, defensive lineman, but I never raised a lineman. I raised skill kids, which is kind of crazy. I'm a fat guy, but I was a fullback. Do you call a fullback a skill guy? I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't have any skill. I mean, when I broke through the line, I looked for the nearest DB and ran right towards him because I knew there was a collision. Let's just get it on right now. All right, let's get it on right now. Let me run over your butt and go to the next level. That's the way I play fullback. But thankfully for my wife, their mother's genes, they had a little more athletic ability than me. But I see this. One of the things I remember when I grew up in Burnet, we had peewee football, which is for fifth and sixth grade. I started playing tackle football fifth and sixth grade. Well, we had a kid whose parents held him back a year. He was already way bigger than everybody else. I mean, the guy had whiskers, you know, and he hit me one time. And I mean, my helmet went flying. My head probably went flying. And I was like, I don't like this football too much. I mean, it was like, it was not fun. I mean, I got my butt kicked. My helmet flew off. I mean, I was like, I was bleeding in my mouth. I was like, I don't know if I like this football so much or not.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think a lot of it depends on the maturity of the kid. A lot of it depends on the coach and the situation. Because let's face it, today we live in a different society than we did when I was growing up.
Yeah.
You know, in the 70s. It's totally different. We didn't have anything else to do but go out and work or play or whatever all day. We were used to the heat. We were used to all that stuff. Nowadays, you get a gung-ho coach whose son is playing on the team. And so what we're doing is we're playing daddy ball.
Yeah.
Daddy ball. You block for my kid. Hey, block for my kid, you know. And so it's hot and the kids are having to run sprints, you know. And they're like, hey, man, basketball's a lot more fun because you get to play in the air condition, you know, or whatever. And so, I don't know about it. You remember you've seen those videos when the kids are laying on their back and the coach blows a whistle and they jump up, you know, and they hit. That's like, what do they say? There's never been a better recruiter for junior high basketball than this drill. You know, a guy getting his butt knocked in the seventh grade. Like, I think I'm going to go play basketball. So you don't put your kids in a situation where they're physically not able to handle it.
Yep.
You know, if they're small, if they're, you know, if they haven't got the, I wasn't aggressive when I was in fifth and sixth grade. Now, by the time I got in high school, I'd fight anybody, anytime, anywhere. I'd run over anybody, all that stuff, you know, because my nuts dropped and I got big and, you know, all that stuff. But these poor little guys, I mean, guys like me, I was bigger than everybody hitting those guys. I mean, that's not much fun for them. It wasn't much fun for me when I was in peewee football. So I think you just have to be very diligent and take each kid's situations in its own merit. If your kid is mature, if your kid is mentally tough, physically tough, they can handle it fine. If they're not, it's okay. Wait till they're ready. I mean, Jordan wound up being the leading receiver in the history of UT football, and he didn't put on a pad until the seventh grade. So don't tell me it can't be done, because it can be done. I just think it depends on the kid individually, and you make a smart decision as a parent. And I'm going to tell you, after Jordan, his rookie year, he got knocked out in Cleveland. A guy took a cheap shot on him, knocked him out. I'm sitting at home, and I can tell you one thing. They don't call mommy and daddy in the NFL when your kid gets knocked out.
Mm-mm.
They don't call you. They're playing in Cleveland. Thankfully, Colt was a rookie quarterback for Cleveland. So I sent Colt a text that, hey, Colt, can you check on Jordan? We don't know if he's alive, dead. We don't know if he's in the hospital. We don't know anything. And so Colt got back to us and said he's scared. He doesn't know where he is. He doesn't remember anything, whatever. I put my wife on a plane to Cleveland. She went back to Cincinnati. Thankfully, we had Quan Cosby who took care of Jordan. Jordan stayed with Quan. Anyway, my point is that with all the CTE stuff that's coming on, if one of my kids said, hey, Dad, I don't think I'm going to let Junior play football, I'd be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
I would, because the kid has to want to do it.
Yep.
He has to want to get out there and play in the heat. It's hot in August to September. I got these pads on. He's got to love the game. If he doesn't love the game to that extent, I wouldn't let him play until you think he's ready to play or until he changes his mind and sees there's something else he may want to do.
That was a great answer, Coach. Honestly, and I totally agree with you. My mom would agree with you too. I didn't play tackle football until my seventh grade year as well. And I wanted to play. I was mad at my mom for not letting me play because all my friends were playing, and I was relegated to playing, you know, street football, street ball. And I didn't, that was no really organized flag. So I was just kind of playing street ball and working out on my own. But I'll admit, I now think my mom was, she was wise, even beyond her, even beyond that time. Because at that time, we didn't know much about CTE. We didn't know much about, you know, we weren't as aware we are now about head trauma and all the consequences of it. But she just knew football was dangerous. She's like, no, football's a dangerous sport, baby. Y'all don't think you need to play it. And I'm still little. I'm five nine. Still like one. I was probably 5'7", 5'6", maybe 160 or something back then. Wanted to play football. And mom was like, no, I didn't play to my seventh grade year. I was terrible. I was a third string middle linebacker. I was terrible. I wanted to quit, actually. I remember wanting to quit. And my dad was like, all right, well, you ain't gonna quit during the season. You gotta wait after the season to quit. You're gonna finish the damn season. You can quit, you can be done after that, but you got an obligation because you said you wanted to play, you're gonna play. And then I think the end of my seventh grade year, they moved me to wide receiver, and I was terrible again. I was dropping passes all over the place, was just horrible. Last game of the season, I caught a touchdown pass, and I was addicted after that. I was addicted. I was like, oh man, I want that feeling over and over again. And then I started to love the game even more. But it is a hard game, like Coach, it's a hard game. And I'm glad my mom didn't let me play till seventh grade. I think it was probably the wisest decision. So I'm with Coach. You can refine the skill, you can cultivate the skills needed other areas, which is what I basically did. I was playing in the street, I was playing with my friends, I was playing sports constantly. I was just playing outside, not organized sports, but I was competing every day.
That's how you learn football.
That was how I learned
it. You learn cutoff angles. You learn cutback angles. That's how you learn that stuff. Playing in the yard with your neighborhood buddies, man. That's how you learn football. You know, I don't know if you've seen my son Jackson's video on his two boys. who are like 7 and 4.
Yeah,
and they're going 1-on-1 in the yard. That stuff's fine. That's how you develop skills. They're not hitting each other. Well, they're tackling each other, but they're just dragging each other down. Yeah. You know, it's nothing really that physical. But that's how you learn how to play. And once you develop that, then when it's time to move on and play full-time football, at least you've got a skill set. You know a little bit more. And like I said, even if you don't have a dad, if you're out playing in a vacant lot with your neighbors, that's how you learn the game of football. You learn cutoff angles, pursuit angles, cutback angles, all that stuff.
No, I'm with you, Coach. Totally agree. We used to play because street ball, no tackling in the street, but once you get to the yards, you can tackle. So if you wanted the contact, you could go have the contact, or if you didn't want it, you stay in the street, and it was touching the street, so you could just try to juke somebody. But if you wanted to bring it, if you was feeling it that day, Coach, and you was picking violence that day, you can go head right on over to the yard as soon as you get the pass, and like, let's go. And then it was tackling. And that's honestly, Coach, you're right. That's where I learned how to tackle. That was the first time I was tackling. Was all right, we're going to the grass. I got to tackle. And also I kind of learned how to practice because when I got to college, you got to high school at the high levels, you know, there were ways to practice. Some practices are full throttle. We're going to practice. We're going to tackle to the ground. And there are other practices. Now we're just going to thud up. Other practices. Now you're just going to touch them, take a good angle to the football. I was doing that in the street as a youngster. No tackle in the street. You just touch there. When you get to the yard, boom, then you can tackle and bring them to the ground. And honestly, you're right.
Okay.
And then I had to protect myself. We didn't have pads, so I couldn't just go in there and hurt myself. So I had to protect myself, too, at the same time. That's where I learned my skills.
That's right. Okay, CJ. Yeah. CJ hadn't said anything. Let's hear your thoughts on this, CJ. What was your experience?
I was listening to two of the vets when it comes to, raising a child, getting, the idea of football in the league. Listen. My wife's going to make that decision on when it's time for the kid to play some ball. If he's ready, wives can send him out there. I'll be out there cheering him on, coaching, whatever I got to do. But I feel like that's a decision that's going to way outlive what I have in my mind because, I'd like to see him play some ball. Am I right? Come on, get him out there. But wife's going to make that decision, I'm sure. But no, I mean, Coach, I loved what you said about learning the game of football in the street, right? I mean, growing up, of course, like everybody plays with their neighborhood buddies or at recess, right? It's all, you know, this tree is a touchdown, you know, that mm-hmm. stick is a first down, and you just play the ball there. It's as simple a game of football as it can get, but it teaches you, you know, kind of the wherewithal of, you know, when a guy's coming after you, what do? How do you, you know, put a move on him? You know, how do you catch a contested pass? How do you, you know, read the quarterback's eyes if you're playing man or zone? Like and I think it probably advanced a little bit from where it was a few decades ago. But, you know, you'd sit there at recess and you'd call out like, oh, let's man up. You got this guy, you know, right across from you. I'm going to play the cover one safety so I can read the quarterback only's eyes, right? Like, that's kind of where it was whenever I started, you know, really getting into, like, late elementary and early middle school. And I think, was it seventh grade, eighth grade is where you'll first start to see that middle school age. And I know I had a lot of buddies growing up who we had teams when it came to first grade, second grade, third grade. I think I played second and third grade. And Rod, I'm like you. I'm what, 5'9"? Like, I'm not a big guy. I certainly wasn't big enough to go out there and just dominate on the football field. And I think at some point, having been a baseball kid my whole life, I didn't want to hit anybody. That's for sure. So after I think those 2 years, I think I played fifth grade, took a year off, and then seventh and eighth, when everybody starts coming back together for those middle school days, that's really when it felt like, yeah, all right, I know what I can do physically. I know my limitations. I know what my strengths are. Oh, and by the way, you know, your entire class and grade and friends are all out there morning, afternoons, going on the bus, whatever. That was really when football to me really started becoming something that wasn't just, yeah, I'll play, but more like, yeah, I can't wait. You know, it was when everybody was out there at school rather than recess or, you know, a Tuesday or Thursday night practice where coaches are, like you said, you know, just lining kids up for Oklahoma drill, almost for more of their amusement than what was better for the kids, right? Yeah. It felt like with some of those pairings, it was, you know, each coach sitting over there was like, watch this, you know, this little Jimmy over here, he goes pretty hard. But no, I think that middle school age is probably that time where you really start taking the leash off of a kid and letting them go. To the other comment, Omar, when do you start getting the huddle and stuff ready? I said, don't even bother with it until probably freshman year, unless your kid is absolutely dominating and you're hearing about, you know, what kind of future your son might have. Eighth grade, probably the earliest. I don't think any coaches really dive into, you know, huddle or anything along that lines until at least there's some sort of high school tape out there. Unless, again, your kid's a national junior Olympian. He's, you know, running an 11.3 or something like that as an eighth grader. Then I think they might take a look. But other than that, it's all about, you know, high school tape against other high school quality kids as well.
Varsity, yeah, I tell you. 10 years in college coaching, I never looked at a film that wasn't varsity film.
Yep.
I don't want to see anything that's not varsity film. Okay. I won't look at it. Now, some coaches are different, obviously, but if your eighth grader looks like he's like 18 years old, then yeah, maybe he may be getting some offers or whatever. But, you know, I wouldn't look at film unless it was a kid's varsity film. I don't want to see ninth graders out there, you know, titty bumping each other or whatever. You know, I want to see varsity football.
No, I agree with that, too. Yes, no doubt. All right. Good discussion there, guys. All right. We'll get back to some of the questions here. But I want to get to this Athlon Sports article, guys. And they do this every year. And I actually like it. It's pretty salacious, but it's also interesting content and interesting conversation starter. So they talk to coaches in different conferences, and these coaches anonymously critique and discuss other programs in the conference. So they are not officially on the record, but it says here these scouting reports came directly from coaching staffs and do not reflect the views of the Athlon editorial staff. So they're claiming these are definitely from staff. So we'll read what they had to say about Texas, and then we'll get into some of the foes, or the rivals, I should say, for Texas, Oklahoma, A&M, and we'll get into Arkansas as well. But let's start with the Longhorns here and what the SEC coaches had to say anonymously had to say about Texas. It says here, Oh, there you go. Thank you very much, Matthew. Such a professional. I think there's a tendency to look at the league expansion from the point of view of the new programs having to acclimate to the league, but this might be the other way around. You can't compare Texas or OU to those A&M and Missouri programs that came in. They're going to pair the Bama wide receiver transfer with their other five stars and probably won't miss much at this position. If you're looking for a weak spot, maybe it's the fact that you have the most famous name in quarterback history as a backup, but that's a problem any staff would take. They instantly compare to the top programs in the league in terms of depth and talent and could definitely win the conference and be headed back to the playoff. All right. I mean, got to make you feel good, CJ, with that anonymous quote about Texas. What are your thoughts about everything that was said? Anything that wasn't true, in your opinion?
No, I mean, it's interesting anytime you hear anonymous quotes or anonymous sources. And, you know, more times than not, it feels like it kind of has a negative connotation. This one, not so much, obviously. But what's interesting here is that last paragraph down at the bottom is exactly the vibe and kind of the hints that Sarkisian has been giving the entire spring. Is we know that we're a pretty talented football team. We know Quinn Ewers is good. We got a good offensive line. But it's the rest of the team that could get Texas back into that playoff. And again, with the 12-team expanded playoff, there's no reason not to, right? We've talked about the depth. We've talked about the portal additions. We know that there's enough talent because of the last three recruiting cycles on campus at this moment that Texas can go out and compete with the big dogs. Shoot, we just saw it a year ago. And while Texas loses 11 players to the NFL and a couple of contributors to the transfer portal, they've done their work. They've gone out and added Alabama's number one starting wide receiver. They've added a three-year starter from Clemson. They've added a kid from UTSA that Ohio State, Alabama, and Texas all highly coveted with 22 and a half sacks over the last 2 years. So they've done their work to maintain that level of play. Now, if you do want to be nitpicky, I think Arch Manning, not necessarily the red flag I would have picked here, of course. You would like to – or I think most Texas fans would point at maybe the run defense, what that defensive line is going to look like. Can your linebackers take that leap up in run defense as well? But, hey, this is as positive a anonymous source I've seen in a long time because, again, you just don't hear it. So I do think it is very encouraging that this is, kind of the reputation and kind of high bar that Texas is coming into the conference with. But at the same time, these are all anonymous coaches and administrators that Texas will have to face in the SEC. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit last night, Rod. The Big 12 is kind of that home alone house where you never knew where that next trap was going to be in terms of going on the road to an Iowa State or a Kansas State. It might be a down year, and no matter where you go, that game might sneak up on you and get you. You know, that's we liken that to home alone. Well, the SEC is probably a little bit more pretty, right? You know the Grove, you know Fayetteville, you know Tuscaloosa, Jordan-Hare Stadium. Everything is all shiny and well in the SEC, but that means these teams are a little bit more talented. It means a little bit more to them, hence the saying. And if you're Texas, you absolutely have to bring it every week. So there's no time for letting down at all, and you know these teams are going to prepare for Texas as if they are the best team in the conference.
Yeah, Coach, you drinking the Kool-Aid. It seems like even the coach here that's making this anonymous quote about Texas is drinking some of that burnt orange Kool-Aid about how good Texas is going to be in the SEC.
Yeah, I don't know what other anonymous quotes there are, but I agree with everything he says. And I would think it would be difficult for anybody to argue with if you try to look at it objectively. You know, you can't really argue. What can you argue about what this guy's saying? I mean, he did really take a shot, you know, at A&M and Missouri. And A&M and Missouri are both teams that could beat you on any given Saturday, you know. But I agree with what he says, and it's nice to have other people confirm what we think, even though we may not. Well, yeah, we do. We say it. We've said the same thing this guy's saying, whoever it is. But it's nice to have confirmation.
That's what I totally agree with you, Coach. That's the whole point, I think, of me bringing it up on the show, honestly, is, yeah, we pump a lot of, you know, sunshine. There's a lot of Kool-Aid being drank, and we're in the bubble, in the burnt orange bubble. I think it's important to get the perspective of those outside the burnt orange bubble who are also looking at this construction of this Texas team. And I remember the Peter Burns quote, and Peter Burns covers, you know, the SEC teams for the SEC Network. So he gets to go to practices and get to see the SEC teams behind the scenes. He's the one that was hosting the pregame analysis for the Texas spring game. And because Texas obviously is about to be a member of the SEC. And so he was at Texas practice too. Not a lot of people get to go, you know, NFL coaches, they get to go to SEC practice and go to Texas practice, but not many people get to go to both. And then not many people can actually tell you what they saw. And remember what he said about it. He said, "I was just down in Austin and I handled their spring football game. And it looks every bit the way Georgia looked in 2021, 2022, and 2023. That quote still stands out to me. And I'm thinking, oh, you mean the Georgia that won multiple national titles in that time span? You talking about that
the current gold standard in college football?
You talking about that Georgia? Okay. Yeah. So, like I said, I want somebody else to pump the sunshine and somebody else to drink the burnt orange Kool-Aid to show that we're not the only ones. And there you go. So there you go. All right, let's talk about the Aggies here, what they had to say about the Aggies. Hopefully they didn't take a shot at the Aggies, or maybe you guys are hoping they did. They said here, the anonymous scout says, Mike Elko was a fantastic hire. He has a ton of respect in this league and across the industry. He knows the program firsthand, and he's not going to worry about anything other than finding ways to win. It's going to be a night and day culture change at the head coaching position. There's a lot of turnover coming from Jimbo Fisher's NIL mercenary type culture to what Elko wants. Marcel Reed might be a better overall QB than Connor Wigman. Don't be shocked if he's a starter at some point this season by beating him out or by injury. They could be really scary on defense. That's not going to be a first-year head coach situation. Elko knows the personnel, and they're really talented. The program has a chance to shift its entire identity this season to hard-nosed, defensive-minded, all that stuff, which can really fit that place. They could be a hell of a place to play. Yeah.
That lines up. Listen, I do think that defense is going to be far ahead of that offense in year one under Elko. And I do think Elko, from a culture perspective, and we've talked about how important that is down at Texas with Sarkisian and getting that locker room right over the last couple of years. A&M last year was a hellhole, right? You could do anything. We saw players leaving after games. They were lighting up in the locker room. They were running around parking garages as if it was the Indy 500. You know, that just wasn't what you wanted your program to look like. And I don't think Elko is necessarily a coach you can pull that on. I think he's going to have a much shorter leash on a number of guys. And when he was at A&M, what was their strength? Well, it was absolutely their defense, right? They had a number of highly drafted players at that time. They had good defenses, made things very difficult to go into College Station. I think that is something that Texas will have to face this year. You know, they get to go to College Station. They get to play that Elko defense, which – and here's the deal with – A&M. I think they have a lot of good talent. Where they might get stumped up a little bit on is that depth. That depth is not near where Texas's is right now, but very rarely do you see that with the first year head coach, right? That's something that you have to build upon year in and year out with recruiting classes. Luckily for Jimbo, or for Elko, excuse me, they did a tremendous job this year in the portal, right? This spring portal session, they went out, they added some receivers, they needed to, but they've added a number of, you know, instant impact defensive players. You look at Nick Scowerton, the kid from Purdue, the first round pick projected player at the moment. He's going to help that edge roam tremendously. Yep. They added a linebacker from Pitt who was a borderline all ACC player a year ago. Adding him with a freshman All-American Torian York is going to be a pretty healthy linebacking duo as well. So on the surface level, you look at the starting 22s, maybe the offensive line is that weak spot. But I think that starting 22 for the defense is looking very talented. What's beyond that, and especially later in the season when Texas and Texas A&M play, are you still to that level that we saw on paper in August versus the first couple of weeks of the season? That's going to be the big question for me. But I do like that hire for A&M. Elko's a hard-nosed guy. He's going to get that defense right. Again, he's a defensive-minded guy. Question is, will that offensive line be healthy? And two, will Colin Klein's offensive play calling be a difference maker early on with that quarterback situation that they've got?
Yep. No, that's the, to me, it's about Colin Klein's offense, right? And how quickly he can get that quarterback situation, whoever it's going to be, could be Wigman if he gets him acclimated to that offense that he has, because that under Jimbo Fisher, man, they were archaic offensively,
yeah,
conceptually, schematically. That's going to be a huge difference, just getting somebody in who has kind of a modern offensive philosophy. All right, Oklahoma. Let's talk about Oklahoma here, gentlemen. It says Oklahoma, quote, from the anonymous coach here in the SEC, they're starting to round out on defense to a unit you'd expect Brent Venables to be coaching at Clemson. That's the good news entering the SEC. The bad news is that they could be bad on the O-line if they can't pull some guys together late in the portal. Oklahoma is a legit top program, but the secret to the SEC is the line play, and they won't be able to do what they want on offense if they can't protect against the average D-line in this league. If you're looking for a new offense, it won't be drastically different from former offensive coordinator Jeff Lebby, but they've got to run the ball more effectively than they did when he was there. Seth Luttrell is a made-to-order kind of OC, a really experienced guy who is going to scheme to fit.
I, I'll say this. I'm not as high on Luttrell as a lot of people are. He's from the Leach, Mike Leach mm-hmm. tree.
Yep.
You know, he paid his dues at Texas Tech. He's had some success. I don't know that I like Lebby a little better. I don't know that OU is going to be where A&M could possibly be. I like the A&M hire. I like Elko. I think he's a guy. Jimbo was so stubborn he couldn't change. He didn't want to change. He wouldn't change. It was going to be his way or the highway. And, a defensive guy come in and let the offensive staff maybe, kind of do their thing. And really, the Kansas State type offense is something that they may very well have some success in the SEC with that offense if they can get the pieces of the puzzle they need together. I think it's a great offensive coordinator they've hired. I like Elko. I would have to give A&M a little bit of edge over OU. And who knows when we play both of them this fall. They both have obviously the potential to beat us in College Station this year.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, OU game, you know how that goes. We've all seen it for decades. You can throw out the records and everything else. You never know what's going to happen in that game. So
yep. –
I appreciate what this anonymous coach has to say, and I think he's on point. But at this point, I would see A&M a little bit ahead of OU personally.
I don't disagree with that.
I'm with you, Coach, and I think you make a good point there in the sense of how these coordinators kind of complement one another, right? We've talked about it a year ago a little bit with Oklahoma is they want to be defensive-oriented, right? That's Brent Venables' MO, basically. They've got their star players more so on the defensive side of the ball. You talk about Billy Bowman, Stutzman, obviously, Jaron Kanak, and now Bowen back there in that secondary as well. That's where they want to have their guys. You add Dominic Richardson to that fold, or Dominic Williams, the TCU transfer on the defensive line to that room as well. That's their MO. They want to be defensive-oriented. Last year, they thought that they were going to, but they didn't play complementary football. And Sarkisian's mentioned this year and year and year again and again in terms of having that offense play complementary of the defense and vice versa. With an offense like Luttrell, you better score or at least sustain drives long enough to give your defense a breather. They did not do a very good job of that under Jeff Lebby a year ago. They were either on the field and they scored in two plays, which that's all good and well, right? You're putting points on the board, or you're going three and out. And that defense was on the field continually. And that's where they broke down late in the season. They had two bad losses in which OU should not have lost those games, right? But because they were constantly on the football field and they weren't playing that complementary offense, they got stuck. They were in their own way a little bit. I do think A&M sits a little bit better with that. Obviously, they want to be defensive-oriented as well. That is Mike Elko's claim to fame as well. But with Colin Klein's offense, you're not looking to score as soon as possible. You're not looking to get to the ball within 15 seconds and get that next snap off. It's more kind of play for that possession, allow the drive to maintain a little bit, and give your defense, the strength of your team, enough time to recharge all the way up on the sideline, because, again, by game 10, 11, 12, you're still going to be playing in, you know, South Texas a little bit, right? You're still going to be in the heat sometimes. And for those games to be as meaningful as they need to be, you're going to need that depth and that defense to be 100%, you know, ready to roll every possession.
Yeah, no, I agree with you guys on that. Let's get to Arkansas really quickly. And unless you guys don't want to do them, do Arkansas any favors here? I mean, they're one of the rivals. They're one of the new rivals. So we're gonna read Arkansas too, even though Arkansas not expected to be a contender this year in the SEC. But still want to show them a little respect because they're a rival. It says here about Arkansas, this is the hot seat job for the SEC heading into the season. Sam Pittman is such a well-respected guy across this industry. You really feel for him having a guy like Bobby Petrino, who the fans and boosters probably think should be head coach, coming in underneath him. That's the SEC right there. If Petrino can get quarterback Talen Green ready, they might have a shot at a 500 year, but they have a shaky situation with their offensive line losses in the spring. Is 500 enough to keep Sam? The defensive line is their best unit probably, but they just don't have the overall defensive talent right now to compete in this league. Yeah, I mean, Arkansas, like I said, they're probably going to end up in a not only a hot seat situation with their head coach, they're probably going to end up with an interim coach situation at one point during the season, too. A couple of teams on Texas schedule may end up like that because Billy Napier and I think on Florida is definitely on the hot seat as well with the lawsuit and some of the other stuff going on with Florida and that schedule that Florida has too. So that is the Athlon Sports article about the anonymous coaches in the SEC speaking up about their different foes in the conference. Okay, I want to ask you guys about one more SEC related topic. There's some breaking news that we got to get to. I want to get you guys' thoughts about this breaking news. And my question, ponder this. What's your crazy prediction for the 2024 season for Texas football? I want one crazy prediction from each of you guys before we get out of here. Before we do, though, we got to thank another one of our fantastic sponsors. Really happy to have Flat Creek a part of the On Texas football team and family. And trust me, folks, you want to make sure you experience Flat Creek because Flat Creek Estate, they are just minutes away from downtown, and they've won award after award this year for their vintage wine, Super Texan. Yeah, they're right now the most awarded wine in Texas and actually a vineyard that's really close to Austin. So it is perfect for you. Super Texan is now available at your local Specs. So give it a try. Of course, Flat Creek is also a gorgeous venue with barbecues and wine tastings every single weekend. It's perfect for a day date with your significant other. So you can visit flatcreekestate.com or you can just go check out Flat Creek Estate Winery for yourself. It's really close to Austin. I visited myself. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. As a matter of fact, wifey loves Flat Creek Estate. I would have some Super Texan, which I did enjoy some live on air during one of our winning drive broadcasts. But I'm out of Super Texan because wife loves the Super Texan because it's that damn good. So you should check it out. You can go to Specs to go check it out for yourself, or you can order it from flatcreekestate.com. But wifey drank all the Super Texan, but she did not drink all of the Flat Creek Estate wine. So today, ladies and gentlemen, we have a rosé from Flat Creek Estate that I'm going to enjoy. See that? Boom. How about that? A little hot outside. Got that Flat Creek rosé. All right. So, yeah, the Super Texan, it's gone because it's really good. But this is also really good and refreshing. So, boom. There you go. To Flat Creek Estate.
Hey, I'm going to go back to Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Do you have enough to share with the rest of the class, Spicoli?
Hey, you know what? We got to get that done. We're gonna make sure we'll get Coach Shibley some Flat Creek Estate wine. We gonna get that done.
Let's
we
go.
Gotta get something.
I'm a Cabernet man. My wife.
All right, we're gonna get that done. Yeah, so we can have a toast on air next time, and then that'll be better. We can toast on air. That'll be better than just me sipping by myself because that's no fun either. So we'll work that out. I promise you, Coach. We will work that out. We'll get that done. All right, before we get out of here, got a couple of more questions for you guys. Hey, UT boy. Man, UT boy.
UT boy.
Not familiar, baby. Hey, love that. Jontae Cook fan club too, UT boy. Appreciate you. Appreciate that love. Yes, we do need that diaper money. It's mind-blowing how many diapers these damn kids go through. It's mind-blowing. It's crazy. I don't even want to go into the numbers, but it's wild. And you are, I'm very grateful, UT boy. Very grateful for that. Thank you very much. Very kind of you. Okay, let me get this breaking news out of the way first, gentlemen, because I know we're getting close to the end of this thing. We got a couple of minutes left. And this just came down. I got it from CNN here. So the NCAA has agreed to drop the transfer rule for Division I student athletes following the civil lawsuit and following the antitrust lawsuit settlement that is pending, that they're deciding on right now. Apparently here it says the NCAA has agreed to drop the rule, making it difficult for Division I college athletes to transfer and remain eligible to play following the lawsuits. It says the Justice Department, District of Columbia, and 10 states involved in the lawsuit announced the proposed agreement with the NCAA on Thursday. The agreement would end the civil suit against the organization over their transfer eligibility rules, which required student athletes who transferred more than once to sit on the bench for an entire season before being allowed to compete at their new school. We know they had already stopped enforcing the damn rule. Now the rule is officially abolished because they had already stopped enforcing. The guys were transferring however they wanted to without enforcement. But now it is officially abolished. It is no longer on the books, gentlemen. There you go. Thoughts, Coach? Your thoughts about that? The chain of constant that we're witnessing?
Yeah, let me preface what I'm going to say by this. I'm old school. I mean, I believe in team. I believe in working through hard times. If you made the wrong decision, give you a chance to transfer to the right, but not an opportunity to keep, you know, you don't get your way, so you go to another school. You don't get your way, so you go to another school. I mean, it's tough. It's really tough. And it's also tough on high school recruits, okay? High school recruits are the ones that, you know, with the transfers and with the extra years of eligibility they gave, and I certainly understand that through COVID, but you got to understand all these guys that keep transferring and keep, you know, taking up spots, that's taking up spots for high school kids. And that's the only thing as a former high school coach that bothers me is I just see high school kids getting fewer opportunities because you can transfer multiple times to be eligible immediately. And so instead of bringing a guy in as a freshman and developing him, you bring in a 2 or 3 time transfer. And but that's just me. I'm old school, and usually old school guys, there's a place where they tell us to go and die, and that's probably what I'll do. But I just believe in a little bit of commitment. I mean, you don't have to be totally committed. I understand a guy, shooting for the stars, come in. I'm the third 5-star receiver that signs. Okay, well, I'm third team. I'm going to transfer, and then I'm going to transfer again, and then I'm going to transfer again. And every time I'm taking somebody's spot, you know, that's just me.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's a good point, though, Coach. CJ, and how about this? This is a little added bonus. If, basically, when it's approved by a judge, the new deal would bar the NCAA for enforcing the transfer rule or adopting any other type of rule that would basically prohibit players from transferring. It would also require the NCAA to issue an additional year of eligibility to players who qualify, who were previously deemed ineligible to play because of that transfer rule. So some people who actually, if they still have some eligibility and they had to sit out that year and they're still there, they're going to get that year back. That also could be interesting, CJ.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how often that impacts SEC to SEC transfers, right? That was a big rule as well. If you transfer within conference, you know, is that something that carries over through the NCAA, or do conferences also have to sign off on this as well? We're just learning about this, so – you know, by the minute, it feels like we're learning more and more about what the future of the game will look like. But, you know, it makes sense, Rod. This is just another situation in which we'll see kids in college for 7 or 8 years. First, it was COVID. You know, we saw it at some times. Right. We see it in basketball. I mean, Brock Cunningham, it felt like, has been here since I was in middle school. So, you know, who knows? Who knows what it'll turn into? But I'm glad that they're getting clarity and they're working it out for the kids' benefit, of course, to get onto the field and play the game that they love. That's all in all what this is all about.
No, yeah, good stuff there, guys. All right, so Oh man, we got a a UT boy here with a super chat. Coach, I need a Shipley Ranch's hat. How much? I'd appreciate it. Coach, I keep telling you, every time I go out with this hat on, people are like, hey, where you get that Shipley hat? It's either two questions. Where do you get the Shipley hat? How can I get one? Or matter of fact, there's three. And then they want to ask, is it the Shipley? Is that the Shipley? And I'm like, yeah, that's the Shipley.
Yeah, it is. And the last time I sent out a batch of them, this is what it cost me. All right? So, I mean, I love you guys. I wish I could give everybody out there once a hat. But good grief. Hey. I got to sell some ranch. I got to sell a couple of ranches to be able to afford.
Coach, y'all need to pivot to merchandising. I'm telling you, these Shipley hats can go. Coach, me and you don't get together on these things. I'm telling you, it's great advertising, but also Longhorn fans, they want to support Shipley, man. They want to support the Shipley family.
I wish I could give everybody one, but let me tell you, we are working with Bobby.
They want to buy them. They want to buy them, Coach. He said, how much?
Bobby, I'm probably not supposed to say this online. I mean, you know, live. But Bobby is working on a On Texas store where you can buy stuff. And he's asked if we want to put Shipley Ranches in that. And if I could talk my boys into it, we're going to do it because I'm tired of paying that money to have them shipped out.
I'm telling you,
I can't afford that rosé wine you're drinking because I'm shipping out all these hats.
Hey, I'm telling you, first of all, they're very well made. I'm a hat guy. They're really well made. Number one.
Oh yeah, and they are Richardson. They're Richardson caps.
It's a quality hat. And number two, they're pretty fashionable, Coach. Y'all know who came up with the design.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they're pretty fast. So I'm telling you, I'm telling you, people will pay because they want to make this a part of their Longhorn ensemble. They would make this a part of their Longhorn wardrobe. I got the Shipley Ranches. I'm wearing that instead of my Longhorn gear. Boom.
I know. Let me say this. If we make them available on the store, we'll sell them for cost. We don't make any money. We lose money on caps because it's advertising. That is Jordan Shipley is the broker for Shipley Ranches. He and Jackson take care of all the hats. I just wear them and apparently mail them out and cost me a lot of money. I don't have anything else to do with it. Hey. But it is the real Shipley. We told the guy we want a Longhorn, but we don't want it to look like the UT Longhorn. We don't want to get sued. So just make us a little steer somehow where it doesn't look, we don't want to get sued. But we want people to know it's the real Shipley Ranches.
Look at mom, even mama. Mama's on. Hey, mama says y'all really
Lisa.
Need to football store. Mama has spoken. Get it done.
That's the wrap. That's it. I like Lisa. It.
You're right.
I love
it. We'll make that happen. We'll make it happen.
I love that mama.
We appreciate the support. I'm not griping. I am griping. I'm not, but I don't mean to be complaining because Shipley people want to wear Shipley Ranch's caps. We love that. And it's free advertising.
It's free advertising, Coach. Come on.
Yeah, we got to put them on the OTF store.
Yeah. Trust me, Coach. I can't afford one of y'all's ranches, but I can wear this around some boosters and donors that can. And when they want to buy a ranch, then you don't think.
Oh, wait, you're this way. You're this way.
Exactly.
He's talking good. Hey,
come on, Coach.
And you always get that right when you point to CJ Lifetime Longhorn. You got to point the opposite direction of which he really is.
Yeah, you go.
Yeah, but really, you're pointing the opposite way. But on film, it looks. Don't be.
I agree. I've done it. I've messed it up live a few times. People have probably seen it. All right. Very grateful that Mama Vogel joined us and that she's becoming a part of the Own Texas Football family. That means a lot. See, there you go. Boom. Glad that Mama's a part of it. All right. Okay. Last thing, guys. Then we'll get out of here. Give me your one crazy prediction before we leave. One crazy prediction for the Texas football season for 2024. You want me to go first? I'll go first. First, my crazy prediction is Texas plays Georgia three times in the same season, regular season, SEC title game, and in the playoff, baby. Boom! There you go. In the national title game, baby. You play them again. How you like that?
Coach shaking his head over there.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what the record's going to be. I ain't going to say that. But they're going to lose the regular season one. Damn, that's good. You know what? That's a good point. They could lose that SEC, win the regular season, but lose the SEC title. They're going to lose one of them. They're not going to beat Georgia two times in a row. They're going to lose one of those regular season SEC title games, and I'm not going to even say what's going to happen when they play them again in the playoff. I don't want to go there. I don't want to jinx nothing.
Oof.
There you go. All right. Y'all got another crazy prediction. That's pretty crazy.
Which way are we going? Is it SEC in total or is it just Texas in general?
Whatever. And you can go either one. You can do what you want to do.
Ole Miss is playing in the SEC title game. I'm on board with it. Coach, I know you don't like it. We've talked about this before, but they're in a similar spot as Texas. Old quarterback, been in the system for a while. They just added Diego Pounds from North Carolina. The two kids from Washington, the Joe Moore Award-winning offensive line to their offensive line this year. Walter Nolan, their big beast of a guy up in their nose tackle. Princely Umanmielen, a big edge rusher. Their combined edge rushers right now combined for about 16 sacks last year. That defensive line is going to be salty. Weakness is a secondary. So we might be looking at Ole Miss right now as a 2023 Texas version. Does that get the job done? I like them a lot. They added Juice Wells as a wide receiver one. South Carolina had 1,200 yards in 2022. I think they're in a really good shape this year to surprise some folks. That's my bold prediction.
I like that. That was good. Because they know we're assuming they're playing Texas. You didn't say that. But it'd be good to have Sark and Lane Kiffin facing off. That'd be pretty good. All right, Coach, give me one before we get out of here. Crazy prediction.
All right, well, one that doesn't count is that watch out for Kentucky. Watch out for Kentucky. I'm telling you, that they are going to mess some things up for some people. I don't know who, but they are going to rattle. They're going to make some noise in the SEC this year. That's my one crazy prediction outside of UT. My crazy prediction is, when Texas and Texas A&M play at College Station, they'll both be undefeated.
Oh, that is good. That's good. If that's the case, Coach.
It's going to be big. Colossal.
That'll be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be the biggest Texas A&M game in the history of the rivalry.
And it's the best thing for our state. When A&M is winning and Texas is winning, everything's good. We just need to win when we play them.
Just a little bit more, right, Coach?
Yeah, you do. You got to win when you play them. UT boy, how about this? He said, fine, Coach. To get a hat, he'll buy an acre of a red. There you go. He said he'll buy an acre. That's all he could afford. I got a little something on me. Lay away, Coach.
Is he going to buy an acre down in Foul Furious, or is he going to buy an acre in Fredericksburg? There's a little bit of difference there.
Hey, amen to that. I might be able to afford an acre somewhere out in the middle of nowhere.
But yeah, way out in Big Bend where there's not any water for like miles. I got some land for you.
Hey, you know what? That's the case. And maybe I'll give me some more hats then. There you go. That's how you
there
do
you
it.
There you go.
All right. Good stuff there, gentlemen.
Fears is for Dove. That's right, working man. He knows his Dove hunting.
He knows.
Working man knows where to get those morning whitetail doves.
Good stuff there. All right. Thank you to Coach, because Coach always providing the comedic stuff on the show too, but also always great input and great wisdom. Thank you to CJ as well. CJ always working hard for us. Thank you to Mama Vogel. Hey, we appreciate Mama Vogel joining us on the show too. We appreciate that. For Matthew behind the scenes, because Matthew's the real MVP. Thank you to Matthew. None of this would look as good as it does if Matthew wasn't working so hard behind the scenes. So thanks to Matthew. Thanks to our sponsors. Thank you. Yeah, Mama Vogel. Oh, getting home graphics now. Thank you. That's beautiful. That. Yeah. And the coach knows where to point too. Oh, 7.1.
I just point the opposite direction. George Costanza. Just the opposite. Everything will be okay.
For Coach Shipley, for my man CJ Vogel, for Matthew behind the scenes, for the Owen Texas football family, for our sponsor South Point Dodge, and also for Flat Creek. Hey, remember, Flat Creek Super Texan is good. So is the Rosé. The Rosé is fantastic. You can go check that out, flatcreekestate.com. We appreciate their support as well. Until next time, remember, we're on Mondays and Thursdays, 4:15-ish to around 5:30-ish. Until next time, same time, same channel. Hook 'em.